Welcome to the Old Tom Dragnet program. This is your host, Adam Graham, coming to you from Boise, Idaho. As always, we begin with your emails and your thoughts on the program. This one from Mark Doolin. We read his first email. We forgot to read the second one. But he says, I'm 38 years old. I'd like to share with you how I got into Dragnet. My father is a retired truck driver. When I was a young boy, I used to go on long road trips with him. I have fond memories of bouncing around in the passenger seat of a huge truck. As my father drove miles and miles, he used to listen to Dragnet on radio mostly at night. As a small boy, riding in a big rig made me feel like we were the kings of the highway. Often times were boring, so I learned to appreciate the radio dramas. Several years ago, CBS Radio AM replayed the dramas at 2 a.m. I used to try to wake up to listen to them. Listening to them now reminds me of those times. For this, I must thank you. I may be a bit behind in listening to your podcast. I feel that you do an awesome job with your commentary before and after each show. Keep it up. And thank you so much, Mark. And we're glad to bring that sense of the past, those good memories back. So I encourage you to email me, adam@adamsweb.us. We have some comments on Podcast Alley, where we always encourage you to vote. Best podcast ever. Love it. Thanks, Adam. Love the show. Hey, Adam, although I'm a long-time Dragnet fan, both on TV and radio, I just recently found your podcast. I think you are a great host and add a lot when it comes to listening to the episodes I've already listened to. I like both your before and after comments and insight. I mostly listen at night as a way to relax before falling asleep. I love Dragnet, but honestly would love to hear you host some Whistler episodes, which I think is the greatest old-time radio show around. Anyway, if you have get a chance to host a few, I'll be the first to subscribe. Jay in California. Thanks, Jay. I have to say, the Whistler would present some challenges, I would think, because it's just simply not as well known as Dragnet. And I think we'd get probably more old-time radio aficionados. With this one, we've attracted some people who are even kind of new to the old-time radio. I'm gonna try and take a listen. I see there is one that's, that actually features Jack Webb. I might take a listen, see the show, so see if it would work. It'd be an hour, which would be different. But yeah, it's a challenge, I think, with those shows that didn't have some follow-up on television or some other media, and the Whistler didn't. Though I'm a little curious, did people, when they're searching for programs, like, I imagine that people, you know, I just imagine people found the show doing a search for Dragnet on iTunes. But if people find the shows other ways, I'd love to know how they how people originally came across the program, what they were looking for, what they found, because it'll give me some clues as to future programming. Because I love doing Dragnet, but this show, yeah, there's only about there's 3.5 years left to go in the show, but there's a summer they took off in the middle, and then Christmas episodes, they did a lot of repeats. But if you'd like to share how you found the show, if it's something different than what I thought, email me, adam@adamsweb.us. Love to hear from you. Another one, this is the best show on Podcast Alley. Given all the shows on Podcast Alley, that is a huge compliment. Thank you very much. We do not usually get iTunes comments, but we did get one. This was our first iTunes comment. Actually, we got 2 iTunes comments, and those are our first 2 in 2 months. Adam does a great job in hosting the show. I appreciate, said with Adam's accent, his efforts to look forward to the show each week. One of my favorites. Thanks. Again, my accent, which as far as I know doesn't exist. Another one from About. Dragnet is an excellent show, and Adam's comments really add a lot to it. One of the major selling points of the show for me is that Adam has removed most of the commercials. I've been listening to Dragnet from other sources, and it has gotten to the point where I could recite the commercials along with the announcer because they were so repetitive. The lack of commercials also makes the show seem much smoother. Keep up the good work, Adam. Thanks, and thanks for the vote on confidence in the continuous commercial debate, which I think we'll continue till the show is actually done in a few years. All your important files are on your office computer. To work from home or while traveling, you have to copy files to CD, email, documents, or sync up your laptop. What a hassle. Your solution is simple. Go to My PC, brought to you by Citrix, the easy and secure way to access your computer from anywhere. Try Go to My PC free for 30 days. Visit gotomypc.com/podcast. That's gotomypc.com/podcast for a free 30-day trial. Well, we're going to get into tonight's episode. You want full episodes. This one is missing of the main, you know, the little part we hear at the beginning. But the reason is explained. So I did not see any reason to edit reality or search for a replacement episode. Let's go ahead and get into tonight's episode, The Big Honeymoon.
Ladies and gentlemen, due to technical difficulties beyond our control at the moment, the Dragnet program originally scheduled at this period has been postponed temporarily. It will be heard in just a few moments.
Here is AJ, boss is Captain Steve. My name is Frank. We're on the way out from the office. 10:38 a.m. when we got to Paris Avenue. Number 213.
Yes?
How do you do, Miss Wagner? Police officers. I'm Sergeant Jacobs. This is my partner, Sergeant Friday.
Oh, yes, Sergeant. I've been expecting you. Would you come in, please?
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hope you'll excuse the way the house looks, officers. Right in the middle of packing, getting ready to move.
I understand. Try not to keep you, Miss Wagner.
So much to do, making arrangements for Dorothy's funeral, the undertaker. Then all this moving business on top of it. I couldn't bear to stay here any longer, though.
Yes, ma'am, we understand. We'll make it as brief as we can. I'd like to have you tell us about this trouble that your sister had, as much as you know about it, I mean.
Plain out-and-out murder, in my opinion. Might just as well have taken a gun and killed her, no difference.
You knew all about the relationship between your sister, Dorothy, and this man, Reynolds, is that correct?
Yes, right from the beginning. I was there when they met. But do you mind if I went ahead packing these few things here? My sister's things. I'd like to finish up before I leave. Have an appointment at noon in the mortuary.
Surely, go right ahead.
A few books, knickknacks, personal things to Dorothy. Foolish woman, I gave her credit for more sense.
Now about this man Reynolds, Miss Wagner?
I saw through him right from the start. I tried to tell Dorothy. He's a fortune hunter, money hungry. Of course, she wouldn't listen. She always knew better.
Charles R. Reynolds, is that the name you knew him by, ma'am?
Yes, that's right. Dorothy and I met him one Sunday night in the hotel dining room. Two of us always had dinner at the hotel Sunday nights every Sunday.
That's the hotel out on Wiltshire you told us about?
That's correct. It'll be exactly a month this coming Sunday. Came up to our table, introduced himself, claimed he knew my father when he was alive. Dad owned some big packing plants in the East. Died 9 years ago, left the estate to Dorothy and me.
I see. Would you have anything to add to the description that you gave us on Reynolds, Miss Wagner? I mean, can you think of anything unusual about him at all? Scars, peculiar mannerisms, anything like that?
No, nothing special. Dressed well, as I say. Apparently cultured, well-traveled.
Mm-hmm.
He was handsome enough. Attractive. I knew it was only after our money, though. Playing up to Dorothy that way, kissing her hand, taking her out all the time. Probably would have tried the same thing with me. It's lucky I knew better.
How did you go after the first meeting with him, Miss Wagner? Did you start dating your sister Dorothy right away?
Yes, the next night. Called here at our home and asked Dorothy to the theater. I think he was going to ask me, but he was too smart for that. I knew it for what he was. Imagine that. Poems Dorothy wrote in high school. Love poems. Silly. She never did get it out of her head.
You and your sister lived alone here in the house, did you, ma'am?
Yes, Dorothy and I and the maid. I don't want to stay here after what's happened, though. I'm going to my cousin's in Vermont. Never want to see this place again.
Yes, ma'am, I understand. How soon after you met Reynolds did he marry your sister?
A little over 2 weeks. He'd been seeing her almost every night, taking her out dancing to the theaters, big dinners, bringing her home late. They'd sit here in the living room. I could hear them from my bedroom upstairs laughing, him telling her how beautiful she was. 42-year-old woman, imagine that.
You're about the same age your sister was?
Just about. A little older. People always took us for twins, though. Here's a snapshot of me taken in my 20s. The boy with me there, he wanted to marry me. My money, of course, that's all he wanted. Too bad. Dorothy never seemed to realize that about men. Girls from wealthy families, they have to be careful.
Well, I understand that Reynolds took your sister out of town to be married, is that right?
Yes, Las Vegas. Reynolds had told her his bank funds were tied up temporarily in a Canadian bank. He wrote Dorothy a check for $10,000, and she gave him her check for the same amount. He said he wanted to book reservations for a round-the-world trip for both of them.
I see.
The same day Dorothy gave him the check, he cashed it. The bank called her about it, and she said it was perfectly all right. An hour after he cashed it, Reynolds disappeared. No trace of him. Of course, his check's worthless. We found that out.
Mm-hmm. And you figure that's the only reason your sister took her own life?
There's no other reason. Wasn't the money so much. Dorothy has her share of the estate. It's a shame, I suppose. Awful shame. Disappointment. She should have known better, a woman her age.
Had your sister ever been married before, Miss Wagner?
Yes. When she was 18, ran off to Chicago and married a young fellow. She claimed she loved him, too. Naturally, he was after our money. My father and I went and brought her home. We had the marriage annulled. It was that way all her life. Half a dozen men. They brought Dorothy nothing but misery. And this was the last, this Charles Reynolds.
How about his background, ma'am, his business connections? He ever mentioned any of that to you or your sister?
Claimed he had interests all over. South America, Australia. Seemed to have plenty of money. Guess his kind always has. You think you'll find him?
We're going to try, Miss Wagner.
Dorothy went upstairs to her bedroom and stayed there. She looks so strange. She took out some pressed flowers from a book. Some boy had given them to her once years ago. Don't know who. She just sat on the edge of her bed and stared at them, old pressed flowers. Next morning, the maid came upstairs and Dorothy was lying on the floor. Empty bottle of pills next to her. Awful disgrace. Never happened before in our family.
Mm-hmm. If you don't mind, Miss Wagner, we'd like to get as many particulars about this man Reynolds as you can remember.
There, at last. I don't know what else to tell you, officer. All I know is I was young when Dorothy was young. I could have had a man if I wanted. But I didn't run off when I was 18 to marry a boy. I knew my duty. It wasn't proper. It wasn't love. I didn't run off as a middle-aged woman to marry a fortune hunter either. What made her do it?
I wouldn't know, ma'am. She was your sister.
What kind of a man was he? What kind of a mind? Making love, kissing her, just to take her money. Imagine, selling somebody with a kiss.
Well, it's not the first time, ma'am.
Is that so?
Look it up. You'll find it in the Bible. A.M. We continued to interview the victim's sister for another 40 minutes, and then we left the Wagner home, drove back to the office, and continued our investigation of the suspect, Charles R. Reynolds. As far as we were concerned, the criminal was new to us, but the crime wasn't. The marriage racket's as old as any con game on earth, and as con games go, it's one of the lowest. It trades on one of the most natural and normal instincts a man or a woman has, a desire for companionship, a home, and a family. And for the sake of an easy dollar, it betrays the victim and the instinct ruthlessly, regardless of the consequences. In the case of 42-year-old heiress Dorothy Wagner, the disappointment was too much to cope with. For her, the marriage game ended in the front parlor of a mortuary on South Hoover Street. For the suspect, Charles Reynolds, it had continued to be a paying business until he was stopped. After homicide detail completed their investigation of the case, and it was definitely determined that Dorothy Wagner took her own life, the matter was turned over to us. 11:50 a.m. We got off a request to Las Vegas asking them for all the information on the marriage. And then I contacted the stats office and asked them to make a run on the suspect for us based on his detailed description and also on his method of operation. I went back down the hall and met Ed Jacobs at the R&I counter. How you doing?
Not too much luck, Joe. Forger didn't come up with anything either. Nothing on him in their files.
That's how much of a start, is it?
Apparently, this is the first time he's worked the town. Orange, we couldn't find anything on the name, not in the main file anyway.
Mm-hmm. What do you got there?
I asked John to check the correspondence file. He came up with this.
Out of Chicago, huh?
He came in over 3 months ago. Inquiry from their bunco detail. Suspect name right here, Frank L. Richland.
Yeah. Same angle, Mary Dragon.
Hmm.
Yeah, the MO's pretty close. Any description?
Oh, yeah. What do you think?
6 foot, 170 pounds, gray wavy hair, blue eyes, fair complexion. Uh-huh. Arms fairly close, could be.
Mm-hmm. There's the alias Miss Richland uses, law of your arm. Here's one caught our eye, Reynolds. Alias George A. Reynolds, Thomas R. Reynolds, alias C.H. Reynolds, alias Charles R. Reynolds.
Wants on him for forgery, bunco, grand theft, a lot of experience. How about a mugshot on this one?
None attached. No L.A. contacts either.
Well, we better get off a wire to Chicago PD, have them send us what they can on him.
Yeah.
Want to prove it one way or the other by the end of the week, maybe, huh?
Yeah. Copy his name down here.
All right.
Frank L. Richland. Correspondence number C143732. Chicago case number D-612-32. Attention, Lieutenant Smithers.
I'm just thinking that.
Huh?
The last time anyone saw Reynolds, when was it, 10, 12 days ago?
10 days ago, yeah. September 23rd, same day he cashed the check and took a run out.
Well, if he's working the city for the first time, he must figure he's had some fair luck. 10,000 on the first try, that's pretty encouraging.
Yeah?
If he gets the idea the town's the gold mine, he's not going to pull out stakes here.
Hmm, figures. Probably trying to reach a couple other women with the same angle. Could be he's working on it now.
Well, that's the problem.
What do you mean?
A woman. Say he's been romancing three or four of them around town. He's got them all primed.
Huh?
How are you going to warn a woman about a thief before her purse is gone? After getting off a wire to Chicago regarding the suspect, which was in addition to the broadcast and the APB we've gotten out on him, Ed Jacobs and I continued checking out the various contacts that he'd made in the city. We checked stores where he shopped, banks where he allegedly did business, restaurants and hotels which he reportedly patronized. It took 3 days of dull, steady legwork. You can say it much faster than you can do it. All of the bank references, without exception, were falsified. Where he made purchases, it was strictly cash dealing. The same for the restaurants he frequented. Besides meager descriptions of the man, the restaurant employees weren't able to help us much. At one of the two hotels, where we learned he was a guest for a full month, we finally netted half a lead. One of the bellboys told us that the man known as Charles Reynolds seemed to be pretty friendly with the head waiter in the hotel dining room, the Henry Kingsbury. We located Kingsbury in the dining room in mid-afternoon, directing arrangements for a large private party to be held that night. Across the dance floor, the orchestra was on the bandstand rehearsing, the musicians in their shirt sleeves. Kingsbury was reserved, not too cooperative.
Yes, I was acquainted with Mr. Reynolds, no more than the other guests, though.
That's not the way we get it, Mr. Kingsbury. I hear you were pretty friendly with him.
Only as far as my job goes, that's my business, making people feel at home, making them comfortable.
Well, I understand Reynolds was a pretty heavy tipper, is that right?
He always took good care of me and the boys, the waiters, very generous.
Did he expect anything special in return for the tips that he gave
him? I don't think I understand.
Oh, I think you do. How about it?
Well, he was always very good to us, all of us. I could hardly refuse.
Refuse what?
When he first moved into the hotel, he became friendly with me, introduced himself, gave me a good tip in advance to take care of him. First few nights here, he spent at the cocktail bar, you know, meeting people, buying a few drinks, getting acquainted. Third or fourth night, that's when he asked me.
Yeah?
He said when some prominent women came into the dining room, wealthy women, would I point them out to them? Single women, of course.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't see any harm in it. He put a $20 bill in my hand. I said, yes, I would. After all, we have to look out for ourselves.
Did he expect anything else for those tips?
I don't know. I don't think it would be right if I told you.
You know, while we're here, Mr. Kingsbury, we leveled with him. We expect you to do the same with us.
Well, there was the two Wagner sisters. They came here every Sunday night for dinner, regular routine for them.
Yeah.
Mr. Reynolds is at the bar. He asked who they were, and I told him. He seemed impressed. He asked me to help with an introduction to them, and I did. Next afternoon, he came to me again. He said he was taking one of the Wagner sisters to dinner that night. It was important to him. He gave me another big tip. Said he wanted us to roll out the red carpet for him that night.
Mm-hmm. What'd that consist of?
Well, special consideration, the best treatment in the house, you know. I was to act as if I'd known him for years. Well, it was a good tip. I did what he asked. As I say, we have to look out for ourselves.
Has this happened more than once today?
Two or three times, yeah. Miss Wagner, Dorothy Wagner, she seemed impressed. At the time, I didn't think anything was wrong with it.
You actually didn't know Reynolds, is that right? You'd never seen him before.
Well, I suppose, yes. I only found out later, though, reading the papers. I mean, what really happened. I didn't know what he was at the time.
You couldn't see what Reynolds was up to? You didn't know what he was doing?
No, naturally not. He was a good tipper. That's all I know. It was the money. We have to look out for ourselves.
Yeah.
I felt sorry about Miss Wagner. I went to the funeral. They couldn't say I'm to blame, could they? What happened? I mean, it's not on my conscience. You wouldn't say so, would you?
She's dead, mister. You figure it. Thursday, October 13th. The investigation continued. Still no sign of the suspect. We got an answer from Las Vegas and also from the Chicago PD's bunco detail on our inquiries. They enclosed mugshots and fingerprint classification of the suspect, Frank Richland, alias Charles R. Reynolds. The pictures were shown to witnesses and acquaintances who'd known the suspect, and they definitely established Frank Richland and Charles Reynolds as one and the same person. We got out a supplementary APB containing the latest information on the suspect. Saturday, October 15th, we got our second complaint on the marriage bunco artist, this time from the proprietress of a small chain of lunch counters in the San Pedro area, a Miss Hagar Lindstrom. Ed and I drove down to the harbor area where we interviewed her at one of her lunch counters. She identified Richland's mugshot. Her story of the marriage swindle matched closely with that of the previous victim, Dorothy Wagner.
Yeah, he was a fine gentleman, Mr. Jan Richland. We don't know what happened. We don't know what to say.
He told you he was from England, Miss Lindstrom, is that right?
Yeah, he talked like English, but he could speak good English, like from London or someplace. Says he builds boats, big ones.
How did you find me?
Big boats.
Oh, yes.
He told me that's his business. He said he had lots of money. They would sail around the world on a honeymoon. Maybe he will come back still. I hope so.
I wouldn't count on that, Miss Lindstrom. Would you tell us this, please? How'd you happen to meet this man, Richland?
At the hotel up the street, the big hotel. They can show it to you. The one on Jackson Street.
Yes, ma'am.
They seem to know he was a rich man. Nice clothes he wore. He spent money a lot. When we got married, they spent lots of money.
Where were you married, ma'am?
We went down to Mexico. One weekend we went down there and we got married. It was romantic. Really nice. Even Lars liked it.
Who's that, ma'am?
Lars. That's him down the counter there. Lars, my brother.
Oh, your brother went along with you when you got married, is that right?
Lars and I go every place together. He don't do anything without Lars. Mr. Richland was nice about it. He doesn't seem to mind Lars. Just a minute, they call him. Lars? Huh? Lars? Lars and I run the business together at the soda fountains we have. It's a long time we have worked at it. Hard work.
Yes, ma'am, I guess so.
We make good living, not easy, though. That's why it was so bad, Mr. Richland. $3,000 it took.
Yeah,
they said the police cars. They want to know about Mr. Richland.
How did you know he was it?
He was no good. When they find him, they hit him.
Now, the $3,000 he got from you, ma'am, how did that work? I mean, did you give him the money, lend it to him? Just what was it?
When we came back from Mexico from being married, Mr. Richland and me and Lars, he said he was waiting for money from his bank in New York. Mr. Richland said that. He wrote me a check for $3,000. I gave him our check for $3,000. Even Lars thought it was all right. Didn't you, Lars?
Yeah, he was crazy. His check was no good. He beat him up, he punched him good.
That's quite a bit of money, Mr. Lindstrom. What kind of a story did he give you?
He could buy the tickets for a honeymoon trip. That's what he said. A long trip together. Romantic. Mr. Richland and me and Lars. He didn't mind Lars coming along either. Did he, Lars?
No, he didn't mind.
Now, this Richland disappeared right after he cashed your check.
Yes, sir. He got the money and he was gone. 6 days ago, we never heard him. I don't know why he did this to us. I thought he loved me. I thought he was my husband.
We haven't seen or heard anything of him since he disappeared?
Not me nor Lars. But maybe they know. That's why we call you officers.
Yes, ma'am?
We have this friend, Antony M. Svensson. He met Mr. Richland once when he was here.
Mm-hmm.
Svensson called Lars on the telephone. He said he saw Mr. Richland downtown going into the hotel.
Are you sure it was Richland?
Yeah, he said he thought so.
How long ago did he see him?
Last night.
We got on the phone right away and talked to the friend of the Lindstroms, James Svensson. He gave us the name and location of the downtown hotel where he thought he'd seen the suspect Richland the night before. Ed called the hotel and checked with the desk clerk.
Yeah, that's right. Fairly tall, wavy gray hair, fair complexion. Might be registered as John Richland. That's right. Okay, we'll check with you later. Bye.
Any luck?
Guy registered as Harold Richland. Descriptions match.
He's still there?
Checked out this morning.
You are listening to Dragnet. Authentic stories of your police force in action.
Saturday, October 15th, 2:30 p.m., Ed Jacobs and I drove back downtown to the hotel where the Bunko suspect, Richland, supposedly had been staying. The desk clerk definitely identified his mugshot and told us that the man registered as Harold Richland had checked out a few minutes before 9 a.m. that morning. No forwarding address. We examined the room he'd been staying in, talked to the residents and the employees of the hotel, but we failed to come up with a single lead as to the suspect's whereabouts. During the week that followed, we received three different kickbacks on the all points we'd gotten out on Richland. We checked each one of them out, but they failed to materialize into anything. We stayed on it. October 19th, Wednesday, 7:50 a.m.
Morning.
Hi.
What's doing?
Charlie Frost called from forgery. He went over to talk to him and came up with something on the Richland thing.
Yeah, what's that?
Picked up a woman last night, name of Helen Stokes. Got a good-sized record, checks, Bunko records.
Yeah.
Got her this time on a check leaf. She wrote one for $3,500.
Yeah, well, how's it tie in with us?
Check was made out to Harold Richland.
8:15 a.m. We signed out, drove over to the main jail, and had the forgery suspect, Helen Stokes, brought to one of the interrogation rooms. She was a dark-haired, fairly attractive woman in her early 30s. As a Bunko artist, she apparently knew her trade pretty well. She was relaxed and talkative. She told us Richland had introduced himself to her at a Palm Springs resort the week before.
When did the business of the check come up?
As soon as we got back in town, he gave me the story. His money was in a New York bank. I played along with a gag. He wrote me a piece of wallpaper for $3,500. I did the same for him. What's the difference? Nobody hurt. Both checks, solid rubber.
Maybe you forget, ma'am. There's a law against it.
It's only a gag. I told you that. He would have loved to have seen his face when he found out the check was a phony. You don't think they're going to push the charge against me, do you?
No, we've already told you, miss. You wrote a bad one. There's a law against it.
I was only stringing him along. I knew his check was a phony, too. I didn't have anything to gain. Look, suppose I help you find me. Will you give me a hand on this? See, I got a break.
We can't make any promises. You cooperate, help us find Richland. We'll be taken into consideration.
All right, you're on. You tell that boy I tipped you.
You know where Richland is now?
I can come close to it.
How do you mean?
You know where I'll be next week.
On further questioning, Helen Stokes told us that on one occasion, while she was at Palm Springs with Richland, she prowled his hotel room, went through his personal effects, and read his correspondence. She told us that she read one letter from a friend of Richland's inviting him for a visit the week of October 31st. She also noted Richland's answer accepting the invitation. She said the friend's name was Maurice Archer, and that the letter came from an Ocean Boulevard address in the beach town of Venice. We went back to the office, ran Archer's name through R&I, and found out that he had a previous criminal record of petty theft and grand theft. We located him at an Ocean Boulevard address and brought him in for interrogation. If there was any trouble, he wanted no part of it. After talking to him only a few minutes, he broke down and told us where we could find Richland, an address out near the end of Melrose Avenue. It was an apartment court. The suspect was registered in one of the rear cottages under the name of Reynolds. It wasn't at home. Ed and I went on stakeout inside the cottage. We waited. 6:30 p.m.
Somebody coming in?
Yeah. Hold it right there, Mr. Police Officers.
What's this?
Hands out in the open. Come on up.
I don't understand this.
Want to shake him down in?
Yeah. Well, he's clean.
Look, I don't know what you want, officers, but this is a mistake.
Your name's Charles Reynolds?
Reynolds? No, my name's Richland.
That'll do. Let's go.
Now, just a minute, please. What am I accused of? Who's accusing me?
Last pigeon you had lined up. She wanted us to turn you. Helen Stokes.
Stokes. Phony thing. You can't believe her, officer. She's phony. She's nothing but a con artist. It's a good reason to believe her.
What?
Takes one to know one.
7:05 p.m. After checking through the cottage, Ed and I drove Richland downtown and took him to the interrogation room. He'd admit nothing. We called Miss Wagner, the sister of his first victim, and she was still in town. She agreed to come down to the office to confront the suspect. So did the second victim, Hagar Lindstrom, and her brother, Lars. Cars were set out to pick them up. At a special show-up, Richland was picked out as the guilty man. We took him back to the interrogation room. Miss Wagner was the first one called in. She again identified Richland, alias Reynolds, as the man who had married and swindled her sister, Dorothy.
All right, Miss Wagner, that'll be all. Thanks very much for coming in.
Yes, all right. Thank you.
Look, I don't know that woman. I'm not trying to be stubborn, but I'm afraid you're wrong. I'm not the man you want.
Lindstrom's are outside, Joe, waiting.
All right, 3 minutes.
Miss Lindstrom? Mr. Lindstrom, come in, please.
Miss Lindstrom? Mr. Lindstrom?
Yeah, it's him.
Yeah. I don't know you. I've never seen you before.
You married me, John. You wanted to be my husband. You said it then. Why did you want to hurt me?
Sorry, I don't know it.
It was set for you and me and Lars to go on the boat, honeymoon around the world. You and me and Lars, you set out those things. Why did you want to hurt us?
No way. Is that enough for you?
I don't know what you're talking about.
They bait you up.
Too easy, Mr. Bunce.
Lars.
Lies. He said we all go around the world, honeymoon.
All right. Get him out of here.
Okay, Mr. Lewson. Thanks.
It's no good, Lars. Come.
No.
Not this way, please.
Yes, I didn't hate him.
Thank you very much.
There you are. All right.
All right, Richard. You ready to give us a statement?
All right, I'll tell you. You can't blame me for that one, though. You wouldn't have gone through with that deal yourself. Nobody would.
What's wrong? Nice looking girl.
Sure, I don't mean that.
What do you mean?
A big clown, her brother Lars.
Yeah?
How'd you like to take that along on a honeymoon?
The story you have just heard was true. The names were changed to protect the innocent. On January 14th, trial was held in Superior Court, Department 88, City and County of Los Angeles, State of California. In a moment, the results of that trial. Frank Richland was tried and convicted of 2 counts of grand theft and 3 counts of forgery of a fictitious name. After serving his term in the state penitentiary at San Quentin, California, he is to be released to Chicago authorities for prosecution. Grand theft is punishable by imprisonment for not less than 1 nor more than 10 years. Forgery of a fictitious name is punishable by imprisonment from 2 to 14 years. You have just heard Dragnet, a series of authentic cases from official files. Technical advice comes from the Office of Chief of Police W.H. Parker, Los Angeles Police Department. Heard tonight were Barney Phillips and Virginia Gregg. Script by Jim Moser. Music by Walter Schumann. Hal Gibney speaking. Fatima Cigarettes, best of all king-size cigarettes, has brought you Dragnet, transcribed from Los Angeles.
February 18th, hear the Gala City Service Silver Radio Jubilee on NBC.
Welcome back. You know, there are some of these bunco artists that you actually end up feeling more sympathetic towards the murderers, to some of the murderers on the show, than you do to the bunco artists, because you just imagine the emotional damage, you know, that was done here in driving someone in one case to their death, and another just running off with thousands of dollars and just really taking advantage of someone. I think that's one of the things. I mean, are we more repulsed by last week's murderer or this week's bunco artist? Really, just because of the way the con man, oftentimes on, you know, when you watch detective shows, is almost, you know, he's a comic character. Occasionally, the con man, you know, he's just a police informant who's, you know, skims some money by conning citizens, but is used by the police for informant purposes. It's almost innocuous. Dragnet, it really creates a kind of real perspective on some of these just outrageous con games. This bigamy plot, this particular plot, is reminiscent of a new Dragnet episode from the 1987 series that was syndicated. I haven't talked about that one in a while. I haven't watched an episode recently. But I remember this one is quite similar to The Bigamist. And I know that when the same people did New Adam 12 and they ripped off some plots practically straight from old Adam 12. This one, coming from a radio episode of Dragnet, updated for the 1980s, perhaps with the true stories. This would have been an easy one to use, update a bunch of it to the 1980s. And that's one thing that happens, even when these, you know, when the cases are true, they're taken from a time, you know, you'll see on, of course, on the 50s show, you'll see cases from the 1930s, brought up to date into 1950s, into 1950s, terminology, technology. And I think that may have happened with this particular episode of New Dragnet. I will try and remember to include a link to the show, on the show notes site to, The Bigamist. If you're curious, New Dragnet 1987 wasn't as good as old Dragnet, but it wasn't half bad. So I'll include a link to that episode. All right, well, that's it for tonight's show. Got any comments, feel free to email me, adam@adamsweb.us. Again, please continue to cast your votes once a month, podcastalley.com. For now, this is your host, Adam Graham, signing off.